What's going on?
The sky is falling! The sky is falling!
The sky is falling?
Are you crazy? No, it's true! Come with me!
Welcome to the Objective Secured podcast. My name's Mike.
And I'm Emma.
And this is episode 13, Falling Skies. We're going to be talking how you adapt and evolve to a new codex or army book or army list or whatever you want to call it for your chosen game system. We're going to use 40k as a reference for today because that's my stick.
Yeah. And I guess 40k because with 8th edition recently released, all of the codexes are in the process of being updated.
Yeah, they're coming out thick and fast. We've had it was probably half a dozen before the end of last year, and the rumour has it we'll have all of them by the end of this year, which is an unheard-of release schedule for Games Workshop. And it's been very, very active. We've got a book that's on pre-order right now, and it's coming out on Saturday, which is Codex Tau Empire. And they've just started previewing the next one, which is Codex Necrons, and then shortly after that we should have Codex Drakari, affectionately known as Codex Drew Carey, if any of you are old enough for it. The Dark Eldar in my world. And then who knows what we'll get next, but there's plenty of stuff due out shortly, so we thought it's probably an apt time to start talking about how you can see the books in a positive light as opposed to watching the sky fall on you from on high.
Yeah.
So before we get into the main topic, though, we thought we might have a bit of a chat about what's been going on in the OBSEC world and where we've been working in the last couple of weeks. So we'll start with, I suppose, Linebreaker, because that's this weekend.
That's this weekend. We've got a couple of days left to get ourselves organised and get sorted, and then we hit the road, literally.
Friday afternoon, yeah.
Yep.
So it's about, with the weather's like it is today, it's been pouring with rain today, so we're going to try and do this recording in between showers. It'll be about a five-hour drive, I suspect. The rain will slow us down.
And everything.
We've got 20 players for that event, which is awesome because that's the single biggest 40k event that's had down there. The last couple of years have been 18 and 16, 17 with a 30k game on the side. The community for 30k there's sort of changed and evolved a little bit since the release of 8th edition, where most of them have gone back to playing 40k, so we're catering to the community down there.
Yeah, made a decision, sadly, not to run a 30k event alongside the 40k this year.
Yeah,
I
know
that's a shame. I'm going to miss some of the 30k guys coming down with us.
Yeah, I know that they're going to run one later in the year called War in the Wasteland that's run by a local hobbyist down there, Sam.
Yeah.
And I think that's in August from memory.
I believe that's
so
right.
We'll probably talk about that later in the year as well. Mm. As of today, we had 18 players, and then I've had an email from someone this morning saying they want to play as well, so that's 19, which looks like I'm going to be having to play Ringer, which I'm not that disappointed about, to be honest.
You look devastated.
The good part about the Warhammer Camp Linebreaker is that it is a bit of a more relaxed affair because we're staying at the venue, and we have access to the venue for the full 2 days.
Yeah.
So we can afford to start a little bit later after breakfast, the games can go a little bit longer. And if I get interrupted to help with rules questions, it's not going to be the end of the world because we've got the time. It does, however, mean that I'm going to have to finish building this Riptide that's sat here beside me.
Yeah, I think maybe not. You might need to look at a different army to take with you. We've got other stuff that needs to be done. But we can argue about that after we stop recording.
Yeah, fair enough. Then we've got WATC, which is about 6 weeks from now,
yes.
Which is a little bit scary.
It's not scary. I'm super excited about it. So if you've been listening to the other episodes we've done or the Facebook Lives, then you know that Mike was aiming for us to have 14 to 16 teams.
16. Give me some credit.
And I was aiming for 18 teams. So we've got 18 teams. And I think I've worked out a way that we can rearrange the room and potentially get another two teams in there to attend. So,
and I'm talking to the hire companies at the moment because we've run out of trestle tables by a significant margin. So
it will mean that it's a lot more expensive for us to get the extra two teams in there. But if it means that another 12 players get to participate in what's going to be an awesome, really big event for the WA community, then it's worth it.
I suppose to put it into perspective, the biggest single player events that we run, like First Blood at the start of the year, was 86 tickets sold, and that was probably the single biggest single player event that we've ever run.
Yep.
Show had a lot, like we had over, we were counting in the thousands when we hit Show, but that's kind of a different thing.
It was very different. Yeah.
For a single game system tournament at a single venue. Like, yep. And 1500 points a player, which isn't a huge army, but it's not a small army like First Blood was. To have 120 players, even at 108 like we are now, in Perth, Western Australia, the most isolated capital city in the Western world, is mind-bending.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's absolutely incredible, and sort of hats go off to all the players in Perth here who've come out and support the event and really got
part of it.
Yeah, it's going to be.
People are traveling for it.
Yeah, look, we've got two teams coming up from Bunbury, which is awesome. One of the teams missed out. There was meant to be a third from Bunbury, and we sold out before he grabbed the ticket, which is a bit sad. And I know one of the Bunbury boys is flying back in from Melbourne to play.
Yeah.
Because he enjoyed the event so much last year, which is awesome. We've got a bunch of the regulars coming. We've got the Young Bloods who came to First Blood coming along with their own team, which is awesome. I'm watching the email trail there. We're being CC'd on that by one of the mothers who kind of wants to keep us in the loop and ask questions, which is great that she's getting involved in her son's hobby and obviously involving the other kids as well, which is great.
And it's great to be kept in the loop so that nothing's a big surprise in the morning.
So that is going to be a really big day. And again, it's one of the few events across the year that I will get to play in because Emma's going to be TOing the day.
Biggest event we've ever run, and I'm TOing it.
Yeah, well, I want to make it three in a row because we've run this event 2 years now. This is year three, and I've won it both years with the teams that I've been participating with.
Yeah. So it'd be nice. You've got a fairly rubbish team this year, though.
Well, we are the underdogs. We are the WA underdogs, all-stars. So we've got the import, we've got the newbie, we've got the amateur. Like, there's only a couple of all-stars there. So it'll be a good day, though. It's going to be quite a spectacle. Fully painted armies required. Mm-hmm. I say fully painted, minimum standard painted required.
Painted armies required.
Yeah. So it should
no bare plastic.
No bare plastic. No undercoat. Has to be painted.
Yep.
We will be trying to live stream from the event if we've got the space to set the camera up.
Yeah.
We'll probably do it more by live than a constant stream, though, just so you can kind of see the room and see what's going on. And I'll post photos from my games throughout the day if I remember. But it's going to be a huge day. The hall is going to be jam packed, and
fingers crossed the air conditioner holds up.
Oh, Jesus. That's,
fingers crossed the air conditioner's on cold and not heat.
Well, at least with it being April in Perth, it should be reasonably cool.
120 people in one room, plus me, plus spectators, plus food.
Yeah, it's going to be
It's going to be warm. So, if anybody's listening who's coming to WATC, I cannot stress enough the importance of deodorant.
We have a can usually at the TO's table, although in this case, there won't be a TO's table.
No, that's it.
There will be the TO's behind the counter where the food and drinks are served from because
there's no room for me.
So
you can TO this, just do it from outside in the car park.
And look, I've had a few people ask me why I'm not helping TO it. And I should stress that it's always a two-person job for all of the events that we run.
Yeah.
In that I tend to handle all the rules query type stuff because that's my thing.
I'm very good at pointing out where the toilet is.
Yep. Emma does all the data entry. She does all the logistics side of stuff throughout the day, making sure stuff gets packed up, making sure it's all running smoothly. And I tend to just run around answering questions.
Which is basically what he does. Is he stands leaning against a wall chatting while I run around.
Give me some credit, Jesus.
I have photographic evidence.
Yeah, right. Anyway, this event, though, because of the captains and the teams, they essentially get to do all the rules query stuff.
Yes.
So the two captains on opposing teams will have a conversation if there's a rules dispute at a table. Mm-hmm. And then if they can't resolve it, then they go to Emma. And Emma picks a third non-participating captain from another team to resolve it. If need be. And I suspect that there'll be a few players who still come to me anyway, which is not a big deal.
It's just, I wonder how well you'll be able to say, You need to, two captains need to resolve this, and if they can't, you need to...
Not only that, but I also want to make sure that everyone understands that I don't want to have a conflict of interest there where I make a call for someone and they have to live with it, and then they blame me despite me being on another team. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that the captains understand that. If you haven't seen the matchup process, you can go to our YouTube channel. It's the 2017 matchup process is what it's listed as.
It's exactly the same.
And it's about a five-minute video which goes through it and how it's all worked out. So definitely worth watching for the captains. I know
if you didn't listen to the last episode, we did go into a fair bit of this in detail. So feel free to listen to episode 12 to find out more about planning for team events.
Yep. But no, WATC this year, it's got to be up there with the team events around the world. I know, obviously, it doesn't match up.
I was going to say, it's not quite the same size as the ETC.
No, the ETC this year, I think, will end up somewhere between 28 and 36 teams of 8 from around the world. When we've got 20 teams of 6, it's pretty big. Like, I know there's a team event in, I think it's Queensland. I don't know how big theirs will be. And obviously, there's the American Team Challenge as well, which are teams of 5. Which I'm kind of interested in checking out as well, just to see how they format their event. Yeah. But, I'm really stoked. I think even at 108 players with 18 teams, it's a huge achievement for the WA community to get out and be involved. And
most definitely.
It certainly shows that people aren't scared away by what is a fairly competitive event.
It is a competitive event.
I mean, there's soft scores.
No, there isn't any soft scores. It's very different to Line Break. Very different to First Blood.
Well, even Line Break has got soft scores.
Yeah, I know, but First Blood is all about the soft scores. Yeah. Whereas, obviously, WATC is nothing about the soft scores. And although
give you a license to be a jerk, mind you. It
literally took the words out of my mouth. We still expect people to have painted armies. We still expect people to behave as a good sportsperson.
Well, you don't want us kicking you out of the event for being a jerk.
Yeah.
But so WATC is going to be awesome. At the moment, I'm going to be taking my towel because, like we mentioned earlier, that book comes out this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-release started on the Saturday just gone. But before I get into my towel, because I'm quite excited by those, the other thing we've got to announce for our events is Show 2018, the Southern Hemisphere Open 2018, happening
22nd to 24th of September at Ascot Racecourse.
Yep, the same venue as last year if you attended last year's event. We're already in the process of organising all the booths. We've put out the expressions of interest. If you're interested in getting involved in any way, whether that's volunteering to help set up and pack up, whether it's volunteering to run demo games, whether it's wanting to run a tournament, whether it's wanting to be involved and run painting workshops or
hobby skills workshops, anything you want to do,
get in touch.
Volunteer photographers.
You know, we've already had a few people send stuff in that they want to do at the event. We're already talking to vendors as well to try and make sure that we've got even more on offer at the moment. I've already spoken to Paul Kidd, local author, fantasy author.
He's excited about coming back.
Yeah, he's just released a new RPG as well that he wants to show off at the event. So we've already got people signing off on coming along, which is great. But if you're interested in any way, shape or form and want to help us either volunteering, set up and pack up or just run anything in any way, shape or form, if you want to be involved and make this event huge, we are more than happy to hear from you.
And we're happy to hear from you as well for people who don't live in Western Australia. You know, we really are excited to have people from all over the world coming to our event. And also, we have been talking to a couple of the local clubs about them being involved again. And we will obviously contact as many of the local clubs as we possibly can. But if you're part of a local club and we don't know about you, then get in touch so that we can talk about having your club represented at the event. So the idea is to try and get local gamers in touch with local gaming clubs.
Yeah.
So it gives exposure to the clubs so that people actually know what's happening. They know places where they can go and hang out one night a week, one night a fortnight, however often you meet, to play games, meet like-minded people, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I mean, the two big clubs that sort of rotate around our community of sort of that Games Workshop style game is obviously Outpost 6030 and Quinana Rockingham Armchair Generals. We also found one up in, was it Northam?
I want to say Avon Valley.
It's up about an hour and a half north of us. There's sort of Albany's got a tentative little club That operates out of one of their local gaming stores. I know Geraldton's got a group of gamers that kind of meet up. Kalgoorlie's got a group of gamers that meet up. The Perth Nerd Herd is another one that have started tabletop gaming. So there's plenty of clubs out there that are getting involved, not just in tabletop, but in board games and RPGs and card games. We're also looking to expand that part of our convention this year for more structured role-playing, more board games, and looking at bringing some things like Magic the Gathering and some of those other card gaming into the fold as well. We also won the bid for the Australasian New Zealand Team Challenge for 40K. So we've got that coming this year. And we've got eight teams tentatively signed off on attending, eight teams from around the country. And we've also made some inroads where we might even see a couple of the Southeast Asian teams make a first appearance in Perth, which is really exciting. So hopefully those will come
exciting.
Off. I'm talking to a couple of our counterparts in those particular regions of the world, and hopefully we can come to an agreement on how they attend and maybe have a really big 40K ATC event happen as well. So it's all very very much go at the moment for show.
Yeah, and I guess for me, you know, we hear that Perth is the most isolated capital city in the world, which I'm not disputing at all, but I would like to try and make it feel less isolated for our gaming community. So getting people from, interstate and international coming to this event and seeing what Perth has to offer, I'm really excited about making a Perth event something that goes on the worldwide stage.
Yeah. And, you know, we've made some really good inroads so far with some of the larger organisations around the world, and hopefully we will see their presence increased.
To see that paying off, yeah.
And that obviously has its own benefits for the community and obviously for the future of the event as well. So if you want to get involved with show, get in touch. The links are on the Facebook page, and we'll make sure they go on the website as well as part of the show notes here for this episode. Going back to my towel, though, which I'm very excited about.
I was going to say, now you can go back to talking about your new little men.
Sounds a bit wrong, really.
I don't know.
So we had a tournament locally run by Crags, and about a week prior, we knew that the Tau Codex was coming, but we didn't know when. And I've had a unit of XV-15 stealth suits sat in a bits box since about 2003 or 4, when the Tau first came out.
A unit.
Yep.
A single unit.
Unit of six.
Mm-hmm.
And
how many points is that unit of six?
228, as it currently sits right now.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, because that unit had a Markalite, so it was 237.
That makes all the difference.
237.
Yeah.
And I decided, you know what, it'd be fun. This is the army that I've always wanted to do. I wonder how cheaply I can do it. It's cost me for that particular event, I will admit to borrowing two Ghost Keels from Danger Rod. Because the idea of spending $250 on those two models was not something I could get past the goalkeeper.
It wasn't necessarily about spending the money, was it? It was also you had building less than a week, and you had to build and paint. How many points?
Those two models are 400 out of the 1,500.
Yes, but you had to paint the entire
1,500 points. Yeah.
So, yeah, painting 1,100 instead of painting 1,500 seemed so much more doable.
Well, I managed to pick up three more units of the XV-15 stealth suits, plus Shadow Sun and a handful of parts and drones and bits and pieces for about $100, which gave me over 1,100 points of models, which was awesome. Having never in my entire life played a game with Tau, took them to the tournament.
So remember when we did an episode where we talked about preparing for events, and we talked about how important it was to practice with your models.
But it was also about expectation and what you wanted to get out of the event. My goal for going to that event was to take a Tau army that was outside of the mold and push the boundaries with it and see what I could do with it. And I won two and I lost two. So they started well and didn't end so well. I still finished in the top 10 out of 36 players, I think it was, 34 players.
I think you only just finished in the top 10.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter whether you win by point or 20.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You lost.
The point is that it validated some of my thoughts about Tau. So with the book around the corner, I've gotten a bit excited and spent a little bit of money because I found some more cheap stuff being sold through local gaming groups. I've got a Riptide that sat here that cost me $25. brand new on sprue that's currently have a motor installed in it that'll hopefully make the burst cannon spin if all the wiring works the way I think it will.
Yeah, we've had to pull the motor apart and
I'm not going to lie. There's some big maybes that are attached to this kit at the moment, and I've cut holes in it and I've taken panels off of it, and if it goes back together and looks vaguely like the genuine model, I'll be pleased.
Yes.
And I've got a ghost kill set over here in a cold star, and I've dug out the Tau Terrain we bought a couple of years ago for a table that never kind of developed into a proper tournament table, and I'm painting that up now as well. So the gun rig.
I know what it is. I'm asking, why are you painting it up?
Because it's a model you can use in an army.
Okay.
It's a good way of spending 157 points without spending any money. they announced the Tau Codex, which was I'm very excited about. I think there's the previews that have been leaked out either through the community or from Games Workshop Direct have kind of borne out the way I like to play them, and I'm really excited about the Codex, but not everyone's sort of kind of shared that excitement.
No, and it's something that I've seen on quite a few of the different Facebook pages for the last six months as the new Codexes have been announced. There's, you know, and then little snippets of things get leaked. And then so it just, I think a lot of what I see on Facebook is the sky is falling kind of response. This stress and concern and worry about what the changes to the Codex are going to mean. And when they see this snippet that's been, that's been leaked, well, how am I interpreting that? And what does that mean? And that's obviously going to mean the worst possible case scenario. And my whole army's stuffed and I can't play this anymore. So now I need a new army or I'm not going to play anymore.
Well, that was the topic all sorted there, ladies and gentlemen. We're not going to break. And going back to my Tau.
All right.
I'm going to take Tau to WATC, which is why I'm trying to get the models painted and sorted. I was going to try and take them to Linebreaker as the Ringer Army, but that's not going to happen, as you heard not 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, you got other stuff to do between now and Friday when we get in the car.
Look, to be fair, I got Shadow Sun. I got 24 stealth suits painted. I've got probably nearly a dozen drones finished. Darkstrider's nearly finished. The Cold Star's nearly finished. Although now he's going to need a retrofit because the Codex changed him. The Ghost Keel's underway. The Gunrig Tidewall is... I think a third would be generous to say what's done with that. And then the Riptide is built from the feet to the waist, and then he's in a million different pieces while I try and drill holes in him to get all the power and all the wiring done.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot of green stuff.
Yeah, look, there's going to be a bit of green stuff, and there's going to be a little bit of bodging, but, you know, I think the shock and awe of having the barrel spin outweighs the heartache at the moment. Because last night I was sat here trying to make it work and scratching my head, and that was after the night before where I called Emma over and said, look, what are your ideas? I can't wrap my head around this. And she said, does that come apart? And then peeled part of the kit open, which, as far as I was aware, didn't come apart.
Does now.
And as soon as my brain went, she's right, violence does solve this, I pulled the whole thing to pieces.
Yeah, that wasn't necessarily the lesson that I was going for with that.
but each time I've looked it, I've been able to peel more and more and more off this so that it's now...
It is getting smaller and smaller.
It's now literally just the tiniest of battery packs, the little motor and the relays that run it all and the switch. And the switch has gone from a big thing to a little thing and, there's no waste anymore.
No, that's it. And you were looking at having to, exchange a wing for something else, part of the switch, and now that doesn't need to happen. So
I've been taking photos of it steadily as I've been cutting bits out of it, and then once it works, because it will work.
It will.
I'll definitely have to get a video of it and some of the photos and kind of show off how it was done, because hopefully if it meets what I think it should be pretty cool. How long the batteries last for, I bet the first time I take it to a tournament, turn the bloody things on, I bet those batteries go flat because they'll have been mucked about with and tested so often. But hopefully it's a cool little novelty that I will never, ever do again. I've done it for one. If I buy more Riptides, I feel like I should do it for all of them. So maybe I'll just arm those other ones with ion cannons so that they don't need to spin.
Or you could just not buy any more Riptides, which is another option.
Remember the community that are listening to this. Like, they're all going to be with me.
Yes, but there's only you and I sitting across this table, so it's okay.
Well, why don't we talk about the new Tau Codex and how I'm going to adapt to the new Tau Codex in just a second. So despite Emma having basically ruined the topic before we even got started...
Can we not go back and cut it out?
No, we can't. There's too much conversation in the middle there.
Oh, that's a shame.
So we're going to pick that up.
Look, I'm just going to say, in my defense, the other day when we were admittedly doing a Facebook Live, not one of these, I was pointing something out and you're saying, it's a segue. So I was reading the language between us thinking it was a segue and we were going into the topic. Okay? Turned out I was wrong. I forgot when we do these ones, we have breaks.
We have breaks.
So we've pretty much covered the topic. I think we can leave.
So instead of the hour on episodes that we normally have.
20 minutes intro.
25 minutes is fine. Okay.
Yeah, it's all good.
So we're talking about adapting to new army book releases, whether it's for 40K, Age of Sigmar, or any of the existing game systems you might play, whether it's an edition change. Malifaux went through second edition not that long ago. It was only in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. War Machine to Mark III.
Which has just happened.
Yeah, because I picked up the Hordes rulebook while I was in LVO in 2017. That was given out to a bunch of the 40K players who were playing the singles. A lot of the time that can be met with some concern and trepidation and anxiety, particularly when it comes to the amount of money that gets invested in these armies for different games. And, you know, you might pick it up in one edition expecting to play a certain way, and then the new book starts leaking and all of a sudden you're going, oh, hang on a minute, it doesn't do what it used to do. Or do I have to cut and convert my models up again because the weapons have changed? Or there's a whole bunch of negativity that also comes out around those sort of week or 2 weeks before release as we start seeing images of the pages come out and the leaks from the official sources as well.
Yeah, I think that, it's easy to get caught up in it when you're thinking about, well, this is my army, I've chosen this army because I love the way it looks, I love the way it plays, I'm a strong player with this army, I know what it does, how to, exploit is probably not the best word, but how to use its advantages to the best possible advantage. So to think that some of those advantages might be changing is scary.
Yeah, look, and the other part of that coin can also be when, like with 40K at the moment, where you're going from an index to a codex, those index armies, the expectation of the community is it's going to be a step forward, it's going to be an improvement on what we got in the indexes. And if you don't see what you expect them to fix, or in your mind that needs fixing, that can also be a letdown and a disappointment. So, yeah, it's a funny time, and I suppose part of that trepidation is removed depending on what you get out of the hobby. I mean, if you're not playing competitively, if you're playing with your mates over beer and pretzels and, you know, just having a good time, a lot of those worries are probably less concerning to the average player. I mean, I would still hazard a guess and say, for example, using Tau Players, that's the book that's coming out next, mm-hmm. There are plenty of Tau players who don't play tournaments who are disappointed with different leaks that they've seen because they felt that one vehicle or one model or another should have gotten an update with different rules or different points or, you know, stratagems or different things that they felt the army needed to compete with their friends. But I also think that if you're not playing in the competitive sphere, you've got the ability to have conversations with friends to make your own rules. Part of what makes the hobby yours is the ability to do those things. If you feel like the kill shot stratagem should have been added for hammerheads, then talk to your mates and go, hey guys, can we try out the kill shot stratagem from the Space Marine book with hammerheads? And that's the beauty of playing with your mates. You've always got the ability to adjust what you feel needs to be adjusted. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's just different social contracts. When you're playing with your mates, you get to make those kinds of decisions
between
the two of you. When you're playing in a tournament with, whether that's with 8 players or 108 players, ours as TO, we make a decision that we're going to stick strictly to the rules as they are written in the codex or the index.
Yeah, certainly we change as little as possible. Even the missions, when we sort of amalgamate the missions across the different formats, we don't tend to change too much of them anyway. So the social contract's kind of set by the TO at that point. So a lot of what we say is going to be dependent on what sort of game you're playing. If you're just playing with your mates and they're all cruisy and everyone's happy to change things, largely you're probably going to be unaffected by a codex if that's all you're doing and that's all you're concerned about. If you bought an army because it looks cool and you just want to play it and you don't care that the rules are being updated, then it's obviously going to have a significantly lower impact on a new for you with a new codex than, you know, if all you're doing is playing competitive and all you've, you know, your sole focus when you built the army was to make it as competitive as possible.
Yeah. The other thing as well is that while we're talking about Tau, and you've readily admitted that you've been playing Tau for...
four games.
15 minutes.
Yep.
And this isn't something that is specific to Tau.
No.
So you've been playing Craftworld Eldar for significantly longer than 15 minutes.
Yeah. Before they were even Craftworld Eldar. Way, yeah. way back in... the very late 80s and early 90s of, you know, Rogue Trader, I've had Eldar.
Yeah, so you've been through quite a few different edition changes.
Eight.
And recently, you know, it was, I think the 28th of October was when the latest codex was released for the Craftworld Eldar. So while we're talking about these changes and, you know, just said that for some players, they've been used to being playing this for a significant amount of time. If I was listening to this recording, then I'd be thinking, oh, yeah, it's all well and good you saying that, you know, when people get used to playing it and you have to change your expectations. Well, you've only been playing it for four games, so you haven't built that expectation. You haven't built that love for that particular army the way that some other players have done that. You're not as invested for Tau as someone who's been playing it for the last 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, the Tau 3rd edition, probably somewhere around 2004, I think, was their official release. And there are guys who've been playing them since day one.
Yeah.
I bought a unit that I liked and...
Did nothing with it.
Well, the army never kind of grabbed me back then. And this is the first time it's felt like I can build the army I want to build.
Yeah.
Which is why I've kind of gone down that road now. Will it be a collection like my Eldar? No. I can say that with absolute certainty. That the Tau army doesn't have enough of a model range that I enjoy that will see me continuing to buy those models year and year and year and year. Unlike the Eldar, where... they were the models I bought at first. I fell in love with that army, and every single edition has seen me add to my Eldar collection, for bigger or smaller. Like, the most recent book didn't see me add hardly anything, really. I've got three heavy support weapon platforms that I've never had before that I kind of went, oh, it's a unit that I want to try. They're not the most competitive, but it's one I've never had, and I want to put them on the table at some point. But the Tau, I can see myself building a very specific army, like I've done in the years gone by, build it out to 2,000, 2,500 points and then just stop, which is what a lot of my other armies are.
Yeah, but my actual point was not about that. My point was that while you are relatively new to Tau, you have been through this with other armies
yeah,
that you are really passionate about and dedicated to, and you've been playing for decades. And so while what we're going to talk about with how people can be quite...
conflicted?
No, they're quite, what do you call it, committed to their army and the way that it's built and the way that it operates. You're not necessarily committed to the way that Tau works and operates at the moment. You're, you know, so this changing codex isn't necessarily going to affect you as it would affect some other players.
No, that's a completely fair thing to say.
But you have been through this with other armies.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that this is actually, it's transferable.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And yeah, so I just wanted to point out that, yes, Tau is something that you are relatively new to, but you have been through this process with armies that you are really in love
invested
with.
In. Yeah.
Invested in, yeah. That's.
Oh, look, and, you know, we'll do an episode on the Tau Codex when it's released with one of the local hobbyists on who has been playing Tau far longer than I have, because it'll be interesting to see their point of view compared to mine. But... regardless, the ability to look at the Codex release, look at the leaks, and not just scream the sky is falling is probably the most important skill to have. Because if you can approach it objectively rather than emotionally, you're far more likely to be able to change your perspective and then adapt to those changes and then move on and find the reason why you still enjoy playing that army.
Yeah.
If you get to a point where you've played a dozen games or more or however many you feel is appropriate and you still don't like playing them, then obviously you can make a call and choose what you're going to do with that army for the future. I know plenty of people sell them when they get to that point. Mine tend to just go in a box for an edition and see what happens. But, you know, the fact that the edition is coming and some of the changes you want that aren't happening and some changes are happening that you didn't want. You have to be able to look at those a little bit more objectively rather than just going, it's not the way I've always wanted it. Because that doesn't help you in any way.
Can you give us an example? I know that we're supposed to be talking about the Tau that's coming out, but when Craftworld Eldar came out, what was some of the leaks that came out around that that made you think, oh, Ooh, how's that going to affect how I play this army?
Well, one of the biggest things that we've seen change from 7th to 8th edition is a lot of the units used to have rules, like every unit does. However,
a lot of them used to have rules, really.
A lot of those special rules now, though, have been turned into stratagems. So yeah. One of the biggest things that we saw change for the Eldar was the Fire Prisms link fire. So Fire Prisms have had link fire now since, I want to say, around 4th edition. I'd have to go and find the books and double check that. I know they didn't have it in 2nd, and I don't think they had it in 3rd, but it was somewhere around 4th or maybe 5th edition that they got link fire, mm-hmm. which is essentially their ability to fire at each other through their big prisms and then focus the shot into a single target. Now, in 7th edition, they definitely had that.
Mm-hmm.
In 8th edition, it's now a stratagem. They don't have that rule anymore. They can't do that without you spending command points and meeting the criteria for the stratagem.
Mm.
And there's been a few other things like that that have moved from a standard rule into a stratagem. And that changes the way you use that unit, because your stratagem, your command points are a limited resource. There are plenty of different stratagems that you'll want to use over the course of the game. And, you know, you could be used to running 3 fire prisms every tournament, and all of a sudden you're going, cool, now I can link fire for 5 turns, but it's going to cost me 5 command points. Mm-hmm. I've only got 6. I need to use lightning reflexes. That's 2 points if I use that for 1 turn. Now all of a sudden my 6 is 4 and I'm not link firing every turn. I need to reroll that dice. That's another command point. Oh, I've only got 3 left now. That's only 3 turns of link fire. So that instantly starts, you're going, well, hang on, I've always been able to do that and mm-hmm. I can't do that anymore. That's not cool. Like, I should be able to do that. That's what this tank's always done. And there's a few others like that. And for the Tau, it's what's nicknamed jump, shoot, jump. Mm-hmm. The Tau have been able to move, shoot, and then move again since their inception, since mm-hmm. 3rd edition. I will point out that Eldar did it first. But moving on from that, the fact that jump, shoot, jump is now a stratagem, which means you can only do it on one unit, mm-hmm. and you can only do it once per turn, and it costs you a finite resource,
mm-hmm.
has left some Tau players a little bit unhappy.
Yeah.
I think I get where they're coming from, because I miss it for my Elder. Mm. I really enjoyed that with some of my units being able to do that. I also think that it makes the game more tactically challenging by making you make that decision for one particular unit. Now, on top of that, they haven't had it for, what is it, 7 or 8 months now of 8th edition, because it's not in the index and they haven't had it during the index. So a lot of the Tau players will have had to have adapted to that already. The fact they're going to get it back in a limited capacity could be seen as a positive. But those sorts of changes over the years have happened. Like, we've seen Harlequins is another great example. The Harlequins were an army and rogue trader. They went down to a unit entry with a handful of entries inside the Craftworld Eldar book in 2nd edition.
Mm-hmm.
They then dropped to a single unit entry in 3rd and 4th. And 5th, they were reduced again even further in their unit entry. I think they disappeared when they started releasing the, was it 5th or 6th ed books? And then they got their own book at the tail end of 6th edition. But it was changed all over again, where the units didn't operate the way they used to, and they got new weapons and they got new options. And we're going to have a codex, hopefully, this year for them. And I'm assuming all of that's going to change again. Mm. I've got Rogue Trader Harlequins that go back, that are older than some of our listeners. Mm. But it's another army that I'm very passionate about. And I'm looking forward, again, I'm in the same boat of a lot of trepidation and a lot of, what are they going to do to it? But at the same time, I'm going to try and look at where I can benefit from it and what I can learn from it and how it can make me a better player, because a lot of the time adjusting to these changes will make you a better player.
So how can you, I guess, for me, I kind of think when we're looking pre-release and you're starting to have the rumours and the leaks are happening and people are starting to get really quite stressed about it, I sort of think, well, you don't know what's going to happen yet. So just, you know, hold on. Wait for a week, read it, and then let's have a think then whether or not we need to have but in the lead up, what kind of things can people do to not be this stressed out over it?
I think context is a really important part of the books. When you, like, Games Workshop have been really good with the week and the lead up too, where they give you spotlights on different parts of the book and they show you a stratagem or a stat line or how something's changed, but they never give you the full context of how it fits within the rules and how it interacts with anything else in the book. Now, they've also started giving out codexes to some of the more prolific YouTubers and commenters, and hopefully we can get on that list at some point in the future. to review and to give feedback and whatnot, how much of that includes an NDA that says you can't be too negative, I don't know. Like, I'm sure that the ones who are, like, one of the YouTube channels actually had a 3-hour video where he literally went page by page through the entire codex and read through it all, which I haven't watched because...
3 hours of having someone read at you.
Well, the part of, for me, when I get a codex, reading the stat lines and the numbers don't necessarily bear out to how I view them on the table. And I think if you give someone a codex with a week's notice and say, produce a video this week and publish it, you don't have time to playtest it properly. You don't have time to analyze how that interacts with this, which interacts with that, which generates this result. You're literally at a point where you're having to read it on face value and just go, this is what it does. I kind of like this, or I think this might do this. Obviously, there are a lot of people out there who get hold of those videos and then deconstruct them ad nauseum to then try and, I don't know, generate their existing army lists and what it might mean for them. But I don't think that's still... I think it's counterproductive without the book in front of you. Because you might know what the points values are. You might know what the stat lines are. You can't really play a game with it. I know plenty of people try. Hell, I did. But I still think that people still use the math hammer side of things far too heavily to determine whether a book's good or bad. And I've played plenty of armies which everyone has said is categorically bad and won events with them. Because I think that the good players are the ones who are able to pick it up and go, you know what, let's see past what the army used to do and see what it does now.
Yeah. And I think that's probably... So one of the points that we wrote to perhaps talk about was how you deal with a new codex for an army that you're currently playing. And that's where it might be slightly trickier for people who are who have been playing... So, for example, Tau, which is being released this weekend. People who have been playing Tau for the last however long, they're used to how it used to be played.
Yeah.
Whereas a new player who's coming in isn't necessarily used to what it used to do.
Yeah.
So they're learning the new version.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I sit at the moment is I've built an army with a specific theme in mind, which ironically does not work in the new codex.
Irony.
It's only one HQ model that I can't use now, and I just have to shuffle some units around to different septs. But the army I took a month ago, less than a month ago, is going to be invalid in a few days' time because of these changes. Initially, I went, oh, you bastards, I painted that model. It's the one model that's actually 100% finished, and now I can't use it the way I want to use it. And then someone leaked something else, and I went, oh, I've got another option there. I can make a different choice and make that work. Yes, it means buying another commander, but it's... And this is what I mean about context. On face value, you go, oh, I can't do that anymore. And then a week later, you go, oh, I can do that now. Or I can do something different, or I can change the way it interacts. So... I've seen a lot of people and had a lot of arguments online with people going, no, the Tau Codex is bad. It's bad. You can't argue with maths. You can't argue with the fact that in a year's time, no one will be in top 10 at big major tournaments. I don't know what's going to happen in 12 months' time. We don't know what the other codexes are going to be in 12 months' time. Yeah. The fact that Tau might not be in the top 10 might have nothing to do with the Tau Codex, everything to do with a broken Genestealer Occult Codex. Who knows? The fact of the matter is that the best players will still get the best out of any book. And there will always be a book that's on top and there will always be a book that's on the bottom, and how you deal with the book as a player will far more impact at tournament results than anything else.
So how do you think that you can get the best out of a book?
Start from scratch. I think when you have any significantly like drastic changes, for me, the Tau book has gone... So third edition and fourth edition, in my opinion, saw a lot of what was called Fisher Fury, which was a mechanized infantry style build. And then we started through the tail end of fifth and certainly through sixth and seventh, we saw the rise of the Riptide. Now, anyone who claims that the Riptide wasn't broken in those editions is a liar.
Perhaps not a liar.
No, they're a liar.
Misguided.
No, I'm going to stick to that statement because... At LVO...
I would like it if we change that statement to misguided or has a different opinion to you, which is LVO, completely okay.
At LVO 2017, there were more Riptides in the room than there were players.
Yeah.
Over a third of the field was running a Riptide wing. That is a very heavy indicator that there is something wrong with that unit and the formation that they were in.
Or it's just a very popular model.
No.
It could be very pretty.
It's a nice model.
No, I actually don't like it.
But I feel like a lot of players get stuck in the way an army plays, and you might have picked the army because it plays that way.
Yeah.
And that's a completely legitimate thing to be pissed off about, because if you've bought it to play it a certain way and it doesn't do what it used to do anymore, I think you've got a reasonable point of going, I'm a bit upset with that. So the trick then becomes, are you willing to adapt the army? Are you willing to persevere with the way...
Are you willing to try?
Yeah.
To start with?
You know, if you're willing to persevere and play it the way you want to play it and hope that you can make it work through tweaking units or tweaking weapon selections or whatever it needs to be, that'll actually make you a better player as well, because you're having to work with potentially substandard tools to achieve the same result. I think when you sort of look at it in the right light, it's improvise, adapt and overcome. That's kind of the methodology you have to accept. And if you can't follow that, then the choice has to be, well, do I shelve the army for the next edition? Do I sell the army and buy something else?
I stop playing?
Yeah. Like, if you're not satisfied, the only way you can tell a company you're not satisfied with the product is with your money, with your wallet. Games Workshop have given us an avenue for public FAQs and being able to access them and say, hey, there's problems, and they have made changes. I don't think, like, there's a thing going around at the moment saying that they should remove the limit of one commander per detachment that's been shared for the Tau. We're the only army that has one commander, that sort of limit. They're right. The Tau are the only army in the game that have that style of limit on a unit. There are plenty of in-game reasons for it. There are plenty of fluff reasons for it. I think it's... from a gameplay perspective, it's a change that had to be made because the Tau Commander represents a very unique situation within the rules. And I won't delve into that. I'll talk about that when we do the Codex review.
Yeah, but that is being transferable across all of the other armies as well. All of the other armies have things where, well, we're the only army that has X, or we're the only army that has Y. So being the only army that has that particular rule or that particular restriction isn't necessarily a reason that it should be shelved.
No, but in this particular instance, to give it total transparency, with the index in particular, with all the way of the points values and all the format, it meant that people were fielding 6 to 8 Crisis Commanders at tournaments because point-for-point efficiency-wise, which is what you look at for tournaments, they were the best choice. Can't do that anymore. In a standard 2,000-point tournament, you can field 3 Commanders now, one in each detachment. Now, that's caused a lot of grief for people because they're now saying, well, if I want to field a battalion, I need 2 HQs, which means one of them can be a commander, but now I have to field a Fireblade or an Ethereal or Darkstrider or Longstrike or something else. And then if I want a second battalion or a second detachment, I can put a commander in it, but now I have to put something else in it as well. So it's going to mean that there are more miniatures sold for different HQ choices, potentially. And it also means that the Tau army now has to go looking for what it was getting from those commanders from somewhere else in the book. The disconnect for me lies in the fact that people are looking at things at too math-orientated and at face value. And I made this argument a couple of times with the index, having 4 games of experience, but being able to look at it and go, okay, well, a great example is the Ghost Keel and the Commander. Lots of Tau players run a Commander with 4 fusion guns. The Ghost Keel carries 2 fusion guns and a D3-shot fusion gun, essentially. So it's going to, on average, have 4 shots. The Tau Commander hits on 2s with its 4 shots, and the profile, in terms of the weapon, the profile is the same for both vehicles. The Ghost Keel only hits on 4s, but the loadout means it will reroll 1. So it's getting less hits. However, when you run the maths through their entirety, the Ghost Keel essentially averages 5 damage to a target of toughness 7 or less. The Commander's 7, just over 7 damage. So it's only 2 points of damage difference, which can be significant. The return fire, though, for the Ghost Keel is still alive when the Commander is long dead in the ground. The Ghost Keel is harder to kill, tougher to kill, harder to hit, has the same saving throw, is faster, and gives you other options on the table that the Commander doesn't. So sometimes looking at pure damage output is a misnomer. Yes, damage output is important, but looking at how other units can fill the void in a similar fashion while giving you something else for that exchange has to be something that a player can do, because I'm waiting for the nerf on Dark Reapers for the Elder. I'm hanging out to see that happen. I'm an Elder player. I love my Elder. I'm more than happy to admit that the Dark Reapers coming down in points from Index to Codex was a mistake.
Yeah.
In my opinion, they should at least go back to the Index, maybe a few points more per model.
That's literally what I was about to say. Like, it's all well and good having a commander which can do X amount of damage, but when he's dead, he can't do anything. And that's something that we talked about on the battle report with Dave, was around, how that his particular Dark Eldar army works. It's all well and good. It does lots of damage, but there's only however many models on the table. And once they're all gone, you can't do any damage anymore.
Yeah.
So
I think when you look at it in the right context, those Dark Reapers, I want to see what the Eldar community does when Dark Reapers go from, I think they're 28 points or more. 27? I think they're 27 points a model at the moment. If they go back to 32, it's probably not going to change too much. Mm. But the guys who are running 40 of them, seeing it go up 5 points a model, that's 200 points that they now have to come up with. If they go up more than that, if they go up 7 or 8 points a model, hang on a minute, that's going to seriously impact the way that people build the army. If they go up too far, people will stop using them. But I think 5 to 7 points will see them used but not abused anymore.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the commander. And people will argue and say, no, all you needed to do is put the points on the commander up or make the standard crisis suits cheaper to make them more worth taking. And I think there's a level of validity to those comments. But at the same time, that solution is as much of a Band-Aid as the limit is. I don't there's core issues with the D6 format of a game system. If it had a more and we're going way off topic, but if they were using D10s or D12s instead of D6s, you've got a wider scope of percentage probabilities, which means that you can, sliding scale becomes a much easier variable. So part of it's a limitation of the D6 format. And I can see the nerd rage if Games Workshop came out and said, we're going D10s now.
Yeah.
You need 100 D10s.
Just thinking that. Awesome.
But I'd be one of them. But I think that's... People need to look at it. If they're only spamming the best thing, yes, that's a lot of the way you win a tournament, but it's not the only way to win a tournament. And sometimes you've got to look at how you can achieve a victory through other means and adapt to the changes.
I'm looking at the cost versus the benefits and things like that with the changes that you make.
Yeah. Like I say, I'm a big fan of the Ghost Kills. They come down a couple of points, not anything significant in the new book. But the way I play them and the way I run them, I find them as useful as a Tau Commander. And the toolbox mentality that I have for them far exceeds what I get out of a Crisis Commander. Now, the changes to a Cold Star are going to be significant, which is why I have to cut the guns off mine. But I think being able to improvise on the fly while you're learning, adapt, and then use that to overcome is... it was something that got taught to me as a very young wargamer by a buddy of mine. It was one of the first... I was losing games left, right, and center to him. And he sat me down and went, it's this simple. You improvise on the day with the tools you have to meet the new threat. You go away after that game, look at what worked and what didn't work, and adapt what your army looks like. And you adapt on the fly once you're playing the next game. And you use those two things to overcome the hurdle. And it's a really simple thing, and I'm sure it's come from some military book or something somewhere, but for me at 13 or 14 years old, it really resonated, and it's something that stuck with me for the last 30 years, is that, you have to be willing to improvise, you have to be willing to adapt, and you have to be willing to overcome any of your... And overcome not only your opponent, but overcome your own mental hurdles and...
That's exactly it, yeah. Do you think that some of those mental hurdles with the changes to the codexes and what that will mean to the changes to the armies, do you think it's because people are used to playing their armies a certain way, or do you think it's because I've got this particular army and I've got 3 commanders in it and I don't own a Ghost Kill? How much is it going to cost me to go out and buy the Ghost Kills versus I've already got this sitting in my, sitting on my gaming table? How much of it is I'm used to playing it this way, so I don't want to change it? And how much of it is, but it's going to cost me an absolute fortune to make these changes in order to make the army work? Or is it just a combination and it's actually just gamer specific, like unique to each individual?
I think probably it's going to be unique because if you've got the disposable income to be able to go and just throw money at an army, the change is not relevant. If you go, you know what, Ghost Kills or Riptides are actually going to come back. They're not going to be as cheap as they used to be, but they're still going to be very good in the new book from everything we've seen. if I don't have Riptides and I've got the disposable income, going and buying 3 or 4 or 5 Riptides at for $90 Australian isn't a significant hurdle. If, on the other hand, I've been playing my Tau Army since 3rd edition using Fisher Fury, and I have 10 Devilfish, and I have 10 units of Fire Warriors, and that's what I've always done, and now all of a sudden it's not as good, and I want to keep playing it that way, well, that's kind of a different hurdle to overcome.
Yeah.
So
I think it's about, and even with people who have got the disposable income, it's still, from the gamers that I know, some of the people who have got the disposable income still don't want to go out and buy the new models because they've chosen these models because they like the way that these models play and the way that these models work.
Oh, the guys who chase the meta, and I hate using that word at the best of times, but the guys who are constantly chasing the best lists from the newest codexes are the ones who inevitably are hurt the most by this.
Yeah.
Because all they're after is the latest best thing, and as soon as it stops being the latest best thing, they have to move on because they're not invested in the army. And it was something I was talking about with a friend of mine earlier today. If there is a level of emotional investment in the army, you're far more likely to do better with it, and you want to paint it better, and you want it to look nicer, and you want to do well with it. But at the same time, it also causes more angst when these things come around. And the flip side of it is if you're not invested in it and you are just buying the best and latest thing, then I don't think the paint job will ever be as good. I think you'll be less likely to be willing to adapt it. I think it's both of them have negatives in this particular instance.
I'm just thinking, and I was listening, honest, but my brain went off somewhere else. So in my life outside of being on this podcast with you at the moment, I work as a coach for different things. So I was thinking, if I was working with someone who was coming in and they were struggling with the fact that this codex was changing and they didn't like the changes, how would I actually work with them? And so I'm thinking, actually, based on that last couple of discussion points, it's really around going, what is it about the change that's actually bothering you? Because you can't actually start moving and finding positives and way that you can overcome it if you don't know what it is about it that's bothering you.
Yeah.
So are you bothered because I really like these models, I'm used to using these models, I've enjoyed using these models, or are you bothered because now I've got to find $270 in order to buy these 3 models in order to make my army work? So once you work out where your barriers are, you can start working out what you're going to do to overcome them.
Yeah, and I'm sure that, like I said, there's a percentage of players who play it because, like in 7th edition when Riptide Wing was really big. I mean, hell, for LVO, I was considering putting a Riptide in the army, a Riptide Wing, because it was just so good.
Yeah. So, and I know that when it was 7th edition, that was it. Tau with a Riptide Wing was the thing to beat.
Oh, yeah. Look, it was certainly, like, up with the Battle Company and a few of the other builds, it was a major contender. And I, particularly in regards to the Tau for this release, how much of it is hangover from the days of 7th edition when making a Tau army was actually quite hard to do.
Mm.
If you were taking the formations and the detachments that were available, you know, it was hard to make a bad Tau army. And I feel like as we saw the indexes release and everyone got hit quite badly in terms of what we were used to seeing in 7th, and the release schedule for the codexes, some have been better books than others.
Mm.
And I'm not going to lie and say, yep, I think the Tau book's as good as the Eldar or the Tyranid book, because I don't think it is.
Well, you don't know. You haven't seen it yet.
Well, I've seen enough of it to make some vague calls based on what I've seen. Do I think it's a good book? Yeah, I'm going to make it work. I'm going to play it and I'm going to enjoy it based on what I've seen so far. Is it as hyper-competitive as the Eldar book is right now? I don't think so.
Is it as hyper-competitive as the Tau book was at the end of 7?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, definitely not.
And that's what I mean, is that I think there's a part of it that is, it's an expectation of the past 5 years of Tau play that they sit at a certain point in the competitive circuit and they maybe don't sit there anymore, without being a very specific style of play and without a very specific build. And I'm not saying that good players won't make good armies or play at a high level.
But
I don't think it's going to be as easy as it used to be.
It takes a bit of thinking outside the box. And
yeah, look, I mean, the games I played with the Index a few weeks ago, I played Space Marines in round 1 against Dan. Dan had a solid all-round Space Marine army, and I won that by the skin of my teeth on objectives.
Mm-hmm.
I can't claim that I was going to kick his ass on the table, because I wasn't, but I won it on objectives. Game two against an Imperial Guard tank line, he openly went, this is good. You've only got a couple of fusion guns and nothing but burst cannons. And then I charged him turn one, and he looked at me cross-eyed going, you're charging me with Tau. You don't do that with Tau. And I won the game max point win because I played them, like I was learning, and I changed the way I was playing them. Game three, I almost won and didn't because I made a tactical decision not to follow what I thought I was going to do and change my mind as a deployment, and I should have gone with my gut. And game four was the draw on Maelstrom cards. Mm. And again, I had a good plan and it worked and I was deploying well and all the rest of it. So, and that was against a demon bomb that charges you. And in theory, like, I see all the memes all the time. Oh, Tau can't fight in close combat. I spend more time charging with my Tau than I do my Eldar. Mm. But is that... on paper, you would never do it. So is that a tactical decision you make when you're building your army, understanding your own playstyle and adapting?
That's it. And there's so many different elements. So which is why I'm finding this particular topic really difficult to kind of talk to, because it's so individual and the way that people play and the way that people look at it. So if Tau generally plays... Tau generally doesn't play in close combat. So what kind of player is going to take Tau into close combat?
The crazy ones like me.
Yeah, the crazy ones. That's what I was going for. But do you know what I mean? Like, I just...
Look, it is definitely a play style driven, regardless of what you might think of your own player, like whoever's listening to this, you will have a particular style of play. And up until this edition of the game, Tau is an army I've tried to start twice, and both times I've either sold off or just shelved because I haven't been able to play them the way I thought I could play them.
The way that you wanted to play them.
Well, yeah. I mean, the older codexes, the format of the core game combined with the codex didn't let me do what I wanted to do with them. And all of a sudden, I can do what I want to do with them and play them the way I want to play them. And that's what's made me really excited for it, is I found an army that I've always liked the miniatures for the most part, except the infantry. I just like the battle suits. It lets me build an army of battle suits and play them the way I always wanted to play them.
But for people who have been playing them for the past 10 years, who play them because of the way that they like playing them for the last 10 years, can't play them that way anymore.
Well, it's not that they can't play them that way anymore. It's
they're not as effective if they're played that way now.
And I suppose that comes all the way back to the start of it, which was improvise, adapt, overcome. You've got
to
be...
And are you prepared to play a different... If you're a certain player that plays a certain way, are you prepared to totally change the way that you play in order to make your army now
more
work
competitively? Or are you willing? Or are you more willing to stick it out, get more effective at your target selection, at your deployment, at your movement phase, change little parts of the army but retain its core shape? Or are you going to chase the meta and just update it based on the best units?
You know, but it's the best units on paper.
Well,
the best units on paper don't necessarily work depending on your play style.
Well, that is true. I mean, the common factor I find with a lot of Tau players is the Forge World of Ara, which is almost universally going to be taken. I can never pronounce the Tau sept names. Borkhan, I think, it's the one that starts with a B. Everyone's calling it the Bork sept. I can't pronounce any of these Tau names. But basically, it adds 6 inches of range to heavy and rapid-fire weapons, which doesn't sound like a lot, but if you've got a flamer that's an 8-inch range, that is now 14-inch range...
I was thinking 6 inches does sound like quite a bit.
Oh, that's the wrong comment to make.
Yeah, it was actually, but I didn't mean it that way. 6 inches does sound like a lot when you're...
No, just stop.
No, I need to stop. Just stop. I was going to say when it's on 6'4", but that's even worse. Oh, dear.
The 6-inch range increase on a flamer is significant when you deep strike it at a 9-inch range, and normally you're out of flamer range. Now you're in flamer range. The fact you can then burn a command point to burn a wound to Nova charge the Riptide to make its flamer even more devastating, and its auto hitting, which gets around the Tau's low ballistic skill, means that a lot of players will be fielding 1 to 2 or even more Avara because they're a durable model. They stand alone and work independently really well without support of Markolites or other parts of the army. They're an easy fix to a problem that is perceived with the Tau Codex. I want one because I like the model and it's a big Riptide variant and I like big stumpy robots.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to buy three of them.
Mm.
I want it for the model, not necessarily for the... Because I actually don't... I will not use the Borkan sept because it doesn't fit the way I want to play the army. So I'm not going to get the advantage of the 14-inch flamer. I'm going to be using it in another way because I've got a sneaky idea. But I'm not giving it away. Don't look at me like that. So no, I think... There's going to be those easy picks where you go, cool, I'm going to take three Avara. They're elite choices, so they go in a Vanguard. I can now add a Cold Star as the HQ, which gives me my one commander. I'll take them all as Borkan. I'll give... The Riptides are the Riptides. You might give them target locks if you want the other main gun to fire without a modified ballistic skill. And the commander will get four fusion guns, which have 18-inch range anyway, and that whole thing will bounce around the table blowing things up. It's 1,000 points or just over 1,000 points. And it'll win some games, and then other games it'll just die horribly because it can't cope with what is across the table from them. So it's a band-aid fix to a problem, and I think the good Tau players, and that we've got them locally as well, the good Tau players will take the Codex, keep playing their Tau, and adjust the way they play their Tau, even if they don't change the army list. It'll mean changing their deployment strategies, it'll change their target priorities, it'll change how they... layer their marker lights, it'll change, you know, stratagems alone will make those changes as well because you've got options you didn't have before. I mean...
Which in a way is kind of exciting because it means that players can't get stuck in a rut and continue to play things the way they've always played them.
There's a fantastic relic in the book that everyone's going, oh, you just take the Pure Tide Engram chip, which is the one they previewed in Chapter Approved.
Mm-hmm.
There's one in there, it's a ground sensor spectrum something or other, which basically lets you pick a piece of terrain where there's infantry in it, and just deal wounds to them as you literally shake the ground.
Yeah.
Or if they've got a fortification, you just deal damage to the fortification because you cause earthquakes. That is an amazingly useful tool to have that is free because it's a relic, or one command point if you've already got another relic in the army, that you can, at the start of the game, you go, you know what, I'm happy to spend that command point for this because it's going to be useful for me because it's a heavy terrain table or you've got three fortifications. And I can still see Tau players going, no, I'm going to take the Pure Tide Engram chip, and I'm going to take, if I'm going to spend another command point, I might take the thing that lets me jump, shoot, jump, or I might take the thing that lets me fight better in combat, or I might take the extended range plasma rifle. I think that relic in particular is going to be one that is going to be hugely underestimated, and someone's going to drop it on, you know, it only happens on sixes, but if you've got 50 infantry in that piece of terrain, I get to roll 50 dice fishing for sixes.
Mm. Chances are you're going to hit a few.
Yeah, and yeah. I think people are so obsessed with looking at the way that the Tau, or the Codex, the previous rules were, that you've got to be willing to explore where those other little niche... Like, no one else has that relic. No one else has that rule. It's a brand new thing.
Yeah.
How can that be best used?
Yeah.
How can you incorporate that into an army? Now... It's not that game-breaking that you will be building an army around that idea. But when you get to the table, look at the table, look at your opponent's list and go, you know what? He's got two bunkers and it's a heavy terrain board. I'm going to spend that command point. I'm going to take that relic and I'm going to use it every shooting phase to just start dealing free damage.
Mm.
And it's stuff that is no range, no line of sight, and it makes all the terrain on the table potentially hazardous.
Yeah,
that's going to change the game because your opponent at that point can't hide in terrain. They're going to be out and exposed, which means that they're not getting the bonuses of cover. They're not going to block line of sight. That's a game-changing relic, but it's been glossed over in all the reviews and all the stuff that I've seen so far because it doesn't let me reroll things and it doesn't give me command points and it doesn't do what I want every other Tau relic to do.
Yeah.
And I feel like exploring those is important.
Yeah, and so I think it comes down to when you're looking at any new codex... Don't just rely on the releases, on the leaks that are coming out to make a decision around what that's going to be, because they're out of context and you haven't got the rest of the book in order to be able to go, well, yes, this has changed. So, yes, Tau can now only have one commander, but it can also have this free relic, which, so gives with one hand, takes away with another, perhaps. But it's about putting it into perspective and looking at it with fresh eyes.
Yeah, being willing to look at it from the ground up is probably the single most important thing. If all you're used to doing is doing the same thing again and again and again, you're going to be upset And it doesn't matter what they change. Like, if you're a an Eldar player that only used Dark Reapers in the past, you've had years of, you know, I can't even pronounce it, but like, you know, you've spent years disappointed with Dark Reapers.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they're awesome. And we've seen them sell out worldwide for people going, oh my God, Dark Reapers are amazing. And when the FAQ comes at the end of March,
they're going to change. I'm
honestly, if they don't change, yeah, I will be absolutely flabbergasted. And you're going to have a lot of disappointed players out there because they've latched on to something that has helped them win games, and now their army lists are going to have to change. And they're going to either have less Dark Reapers or less of everything else, which is going to make the games harder to win. Mm. So they're going to have to go back to the Codex and start again, and then they're going to have all these Dark Reapers, you know, sitting on shelves, gathering dust, essentially.
Mm.
But yeah, look, my advice for anyone with a new Codex, with a new edition, pick it up with fresh eyes, then go and rebuild your army, and then play games and improvise and adapt and then overcome. That's all I can say. Well, after Emma's hilarious faux pas that has just come across our listening pleasure, I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did, particularly during the editing process. It was amazing. Mm.
It was innocently meant. I just like that putting out there.
Sure. We're kind of done for this topic. I suppose the best thing we can kind of round it off with is don't jump to conclusions. Look at it with fresh eyes and, you know, be measured about your approach.
Yeah, work out what it is that's actually bothering you about the changes and try and have a think about, is there a way that you can reframe it and relook at it and, like you say, look at it with fresh eyes and, you know, use it to your advantage in some way.
It doesn't have to be a negative experience. It just needs to be a learning and growth experience for you, both as a gamer and potentially in a way that you approach all problems in life. So, I think that war.
So the way that you approach all problems in life, violence sorts everything.
Look, I'm not going to lie. That a hammer is the most useful tool in the toolbox.
Mm. I'm not sure that's the appropriate message that we're trying to share.
No, look, I've got a soldering iron out on the desk at the moment. I'm going to go back to mucking about with the soldering iron, trying to get these connections all working. But before we do go, first things first, our YouTube channel. If you haven't gone and checked it out, we are endeavouring to get a battle report up every fortnight. The next one hopefully will go up in just over a week's time. We're going to record it while we're down in Albany with an
Albany player that doesn't yet know about it.
No, we're going to shock someone while we're down there.
But with a live audience.
Yes, for the cajoling and the... I suppose the spectator... I better win it. I can't afford to lose it in front of everyone.
Yeah.
Maybe I can get two of them to play and then I can commentate. Oh, that's a good idea.
We'll have a chat about this when we finish recording.
I wish I could convey the look on your face on audio, but I can't. So,
well, I'll just say, I did suggest that we do these as webinars rather than podcasts, but the listeners preferred to have it just listening to our voices.
Oh, yeah, it's their fault.
So, yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, be sure to go and check it out. We're still dabbling with the format and the audio and the video and all the rest of it as we're experimenting with new technology, but we decided it was more important to give you guys some content to check out than just do nothing.
Mm.
So by all means, give us feedback. We're doing
preferably
our best.
Constructive.
Yes. And while we're on topic of that, the next phase of getting involved and more heavily in the audio and video side is we're going to open a Patreon. And that is endeavouring to improve the standard of the content. And we're going to be giving links and stuff out for that in the future. So if you'd like to support the channel, both audio, video, and everything else that we do, we would appreciate any and all support we might get. So once that's all up and running, I'm still looking at all the legal stuff and all the rest of it, but we'll be providing links for that. And anything that you guys feel that we deserve is more than welcome and appreciated.
Unless it's a kick up the backside,
in which case you can have those.
So they're all going to you.
Other than that, what else is there? Anything else we have to cover?
If you haven't already liked us on Facebook, please do so. We're at 962 likes, and it's killing me that we're so close to 1,000 and yet so far away.
It's come a long way, though.
Like, we have come a long way.
It's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah. Especially when we were so excited when we got to 100.
Yeah. Well, we've just hit 100 on YouTube from the last Wednesday when we were doing the live Facebook stream. When I mentioned we were at 99 and a bunch of the viewers jumped on and hit subscribe on YouTube, which was very exciting.
Very much appreciated. And I hope that, you know, in the not too distant future, we'll be hitting a couple of thousand, you know, 10,000 likes on Facebook, and we'll be looking back at 1,000 and going, oh, weren't we cute, wanting 1,000. But, you know, we take every milestone.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and hopefully you're checking out the website as well, and all the other sort of little social connections we try and put out with Twitter and Instagram, although I will admit Instagram's kind of fallen by the wayside because there's only two of us and we're doing the best we can with all the different media outlets.
Yeah.
If you have any suggestions for topics that you want to see us cover on this web podcast or on the live stream on the Facebook, or if there's a particular matchup you'd like to see us play on the YouTube channel, particular armies or particular missions or anything like that, by all means, send them through to us either on the Facebook page or on the website with the Contact Us page.
If it could be relatively achievable, I'd appreciate that.
I don't mind if anyone out there wants to say, I need to build a new army with this particular style in mind so that I can go and record that game.
That's okay. That's not going to happen. I was more thinking, like, Sam threw down the gauntlet that he wants us, well, he wants me to write a story to go in the lead up to you playing a particular game. And I was excited about the idea, but I'm finding some pitfalls with it, I will admit.
The fact you don't know what's most of the words and the phrases are. And
it's the biggest pitfall, yeah. I'm going to be honest.
She is getting better at the game, people. She's Emma still hasn't played a game, but the osmosis is slowly seeping into her so that when you start using words like Craft World Eldar and Tau and Battle Suits and Riptides, she knows what
and
those
I'm
words
totally
mean.
I'm totally into the whole debate. Is it Tau or is it Tau? So.
Oh, with the apostrophe?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I think it's just Tau and we'll all move on. If you type it, I suppose there's an argument. Although I will admit I didn't add the apostrophe because basically the website doesn't like that apostrophe. It really objects to it for all the SEO and all the other like back end of the website. Mm. So it misses out on the apostrophe when I type it because the website says no.
And so if you're struggling with the fact that we've written it without the apostrophe.
That's why.
Yep, we apologise. If you're struggling with the fact we've been pronouncing it for Tau through the whole episode and you prefer it pronounced to Ow. Tough. Oh, well. We're not going back and re-recording it now.
No. But that's it for today. We hope you've enjoyed the episode. And like I said earlier, feel free to shoot us through topics and anything else you'd like to see us or hear us cover.
Please shoot through some topics. The idea is that we're trying to create content that you want to listen to and you want to watch. So it really helps if you tell us what you want to listen to and you want to watch so that we've got something to base that on rather than us just going, oh, we've been seeing this on Facebook. Let's talk about this. Or, oh, I keep hearing about this. So, which is pretty much what we've been using for the last however many weeks.
So get in touch. Let us know what you'd like us to cover and we'll put it in a future episode. But until then, we hope you enjoyed yourself and we will see you on the next episode.
See you then.
Listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.